Blog Talk Radio.
Indeed, and a very, very, very good evening to you. Here we're coming to you live from our Frat House Sports Radio Network garage. And here we are. I'm hearing all kinds of reverb and feedback. Who's with me out there?
I hear it, too.
Frat House, yeah, is that Frat House sidekick with us?
Hey, that's better.
Absolutely, yeah. Boys.
Yeah, there we go. Holy smokes, what in the world happened there?
I don't know. It cleared up all of a sudden.
Yeah, I like
We're
it.
Good.
I like it. All right, well, at any rate, listen.
Welcome
we've got no
to Blog
to
Talk Radio.
Yeah, it must be the case. Yeah, we're being haunted. Well, here we are, and welcome to everyone that's listening. We're here on a Friday night with you ahead of a Saturday race, and we've had a few of these now. This is like our third, I believe, evening broadcast ahead of the race coming to you on Saturday. Next week we'll be back to normal on our Sunday morning. So we appreciate the coffee and donuts if you're out there and you join us on Sunday mornings. And then actually the very next week we're going to switch it back, boys, and we're going to be back on the evening for that Kansas weekend. That'll be May 8th on Friday night will be coming. So we're going to do a little flip-flop for everybody that's out there listening. If you follow the motorsports and are a gearhead like we are, we know that the seasons change and sometimes the weekends change. So welcome to everybody that's here. Fred House Sidekick, you are with me out there in St. Louis. Is that right?
Yes, at Fred House Sports Midwest. Yes, sir. That's
right. Absolutely. Go Blues. And also over
yeah,
here.
Daddy.
To my left, we have our crew chief, Brandon. Good evening, Brandon. You're with us as well.
Oh, yeah. Ready for some racing. Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, Brandon, you'll be getting into it with us a little bit when we start talking about Richmond, but you are going to be going to Richmond to see this event.
Yes, I am. I'm leaving tomorrow morning and going to be down there, and it'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. I always enjoy Richmond. Richmond's a great race, great track. It's just a good time.
Awesome.
It's one of the best, in my opinion, it's one of the best tracks on the circuit.
There you go. One of the best places to see the race, and Brandon's going to be there. So we're going to get his take on what went on next week when we come back to you. Again, that'll be next Sunday. We'll talk about what Brandon saw there and, of course, the race results. But here we are tonight, and actually we don't want to talk about a race that hasn't been. What we can do is just turn the clock, and we'll talk about last week's race, the Food City 500, in support of Steve Burns, Stand Up to Cancer. That went off last week. We're going to chat a little bit about that tonight while you're listening with us. Eric Jones got a run in that race last week, so we're going to kind of talk about Eric Jones and some of the substitutions that are going on. Oh, but wait, just today we heard there's going to be even more changes involving the Toyota camps, so we're going to touch on a little bit of that. And also, like, some other news that really just broke over today, and gentlemen, we were going through it a little bit pre-show, and we're going to touch on it. Kyle Busch essentially could be accommodated, according to Brian France, if he can return to run in the Sprint Cup Series yet this year before chase time. So we want to get some thoughts on all of that, and I'll bring you men in on that, and we can chat about it. Of course, we're going to have our own Frat House Mike on the program a bit later. He's going to give us an NHRA update as those folks are kicking it back up as well this weekend. But for all of you listening out there, if you'd like to reach out and holler at us or join in the conversation or just have a beer with us, feel free to do that. 347 626-9964, and I'll tell you what, the first one's on me. Don't hesitate to reach out and give us a call. All right, let's do this. I guess what we could do is we could start it more or less on the down note, and then we'll try and bring it back up. I don't know, Sidekick, I don't know, Brandon, how much influence you would say Steve Burns had on the sport from your perspective, from your vantage point, each of you. You both have followed the sport a lot longer than I have. I only knew Steve Burns as a personality probably in the last 18 months of his life, going back to last year and maybe a little the year before. He almost covered the sport from start to finish last year, but then he left out and took a leave in October. So he didn't quite see the end of the season. And then, of course, now, you know, he's been in this battle, and I don't know if either of you had thoughts about it. This, I'll say, I guess NASCAR got it right because, unfortunately, he did perish. He lost his battle. We know that on Tuesday. But, in fact, they couldn't have timed it better to at least get a tribute in to the man while he was alive, right? Anybody have thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, it was good. It was good that they did all that, and you could pretty much tell NASCAR was aware of the impending end of his life. I mean, because they, in the last several weeks, made a big, you know, push. I mean, some of the drivers were putting him over the passenger door. You know, they renamed the race last week to add his, you know, stand up for cancer part. You know, they knew that his days were numbered, and it was pretty good that they got all that in. You know, he even commented on Twitter about it. You know, so that's kind of cool. You know, he was a good personality. He was fun to watch. He wasn't, you know, an annoying guy or anything. So
yeah, he's not dropping tacos.
His final tweet was in answer to a question. The question was, did you make it? Did you see my guy almost won it, you know? And his final tweet was, I'll get it wrong now. I ran the distance, or I went the distance, something to that effect. And that was essentially, boy, the perfect epitaph from everybody I've heard about Steve Burns. What would you say, Sidekick? Did you follow him? I mean, he was in the sport a very long time, evidently.
Yeah,
is,
I mean,
you know, with Fox and
just,
Seed, he was with quite a few networks.
I think he was in the sport longer than I've been following the sport.
Yeah, how about it?
He was a great reporter. Good stuff, you know. But I think he meant more to the drivers and stuff, because, you know, we got to see Steve Burns reporting, you know, on pit road and you know, all the different reporting. But we never actually got to meet Steve. You know what I mean? And I've watched NASCAR, you know, little clips that they're doing remembering Steve,
tributes,
where they're, you
right.
know, where they're showing the some of these behind the camera moments, you know, and stuff with him and Dale Sr., where Dale Sr. was interviewing him and said, Steve, what's your last name again, you know?
Yeah.
And you know, and some of these outtakes where it made him a little bit more personal, you know what I mean?
And yeah, absolutely.
From
mm-hmm.
from a fan's perspective, I mean, you know, anybody that, you know, passes away from cancer, things mm-hmm. like that, always, you know, we always feel bad for and miss. But I really think the impact is more to the drivers and, you know, and track personnel that actually got to see Steve. And I think that's probably the greatest part of it, is, you know, all the stuff that Steve did that we didn't see behind the camera. You know?
Yeah, evidently that was something of the persona that seemed to be shared. So that's a very good point, Sidekick. I mean, you know, the guy was a real human. But evidently a giant in the industry, and so the tweets and that came out on his behalf and for his family, obviously, from all of us at the Frat House, we share in that, you know, all the best to his family and certainly his, you know, his his wife and his son, who I guess was sort of the apple of his eye.
Oh, yeah, and that was one thing real quick, Mark.
A very good thing. Let me add, go ahead.
All the MWR guys are this weekend are running the picture of him and his son.
Right.
On the there's a little photo of them on the front of their cars. And Josh Wise is actually running his
with him on the hood, right?
On the hood. Like the whole whole hood is
That's a real nice gesture. Yep.
So,
nice gesture. Well, that was great. I'm glad he got to see it. But I don't know. We're going to talk about whether you guys were so happy to see it. I mean, my goodness, one day before the Boston Marathon, NASCAR decided to hold its own version. We could call it last week's Bristol Marathon. My goodness, we had 11 cautions, 4 rain delays, an eventual green-white checker saw Matt Kenseth break through and get his 51st Sprint Cup to end his 51st Sprint Cup winless drought. I mean, he had gone quite a while. Ironically, it was a drought that ended on the wettest day of 2015. As I said last week, we really hadn't had any kind of weather issues thus far, and it's been a fun year that way. We've seen all the events, but this one came through, and it came through with a dickens. It culminated, essentially, a long day's race into the nighttime. My goodness. It was memorable for being in over 8 hours duration. We had multiple wrecks. The thing ran 511 total laps, guys. We were worried going in, would we even get half the race in? Would half of it count? No, don't worry. It wound up being in excess of the 500 laps that were scheduled. Good for Kenseth. He had the most patience. He had the best-looking ride almost at the end, and he ran it from pole to pole. I mean, wow, what a race. What's your take on the race? I'll throw it out there real wide open first. Brandon, how'd you like that Bristol Marathon?
No, it wasn't too bad. I think the end of it was a little ridiculous, you know, trying to get that last green-white checker in. You know, I've seen guys like Tony Stewart came out and commended them, saying, oh, they did the right thing for the fans, blah, blah, blah. You know, I think it was a little overkill. I think they could have just ended it, you know, at that point, you know, to delay that long. I think it was over almost an hour. To me, that was a little nuts. But it was a decent race. I mean, it was a good race to watch. You know, it always sucks when it rains at a racetrack because there's nothing to do when you're there. And on TV, obviously, it's not the best situation for the networks. They just sit there, waste time interviewing people and stuff. But, you know, it happens. And it's just something you got to deal with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I guess it depends if you're the driver that placed well or didn't place well at all, depending how that final ridiculous, how many yellow caution laps we took. What did you think of it just in general, Sidekick? How would you rate the Bristol event? I'm not going to lie. I liked it pretty well. I thought what we had between the 4 hours of delay was actually fun. What did you think?
I hate when they do this crap. Don't get me wrong. I understand, you know, from a fan's perspective, because I've been there. I mean, I spent 10 hours.
You're at the track, man.
I spent 10 hours at Daytona last year through tornadoes and everything else.
Right.
But, you know, the thing is, if it's a Saturday race, I see no reason why, you know, you say, okay, we're gonna go this long, and if we can't get it in, you know, we're just going to come back tomorrow. It's Sunday. You know, we're sorry. We hate to make the fans go, you know, leave and then come back tomorrow. I know. Debbie Downer. But versus a Sunday race where, you know, if you don't get it in on a Sunday, you're talking about Monday. You're talking about people got work. They may have to, you know, did they take a day off? Stuff like that, you know. I can understand trying to get it in on a Sunday. But on a Saturday, nasty weather like this, multiple delays. You know, and then the other thing is, if they made it halfway to the race, why didn't they call it?
Well, they did, because they only went 22 laps.
Right.
And then they had a long delay, and then they came back, you know, what was it, around 7 o'clock Eastern time. know, and it was that race was Sunday, so it's not like, you know.
Yeah, it was
they
right.
went into
it wasn't
the night.
Saturday night. It was
a
Sunday race.
I'm sorry.
That was part of the problem.
I'm sorry. I got confused.
I mean, once they decided, and in honesty, I agree with both of you. NASCAR had a brain fart in the first 20, and they had a brain fart in the last 20. In between, and when we didn't have all the inclement weather and the nonsense, the racing product and what we saw on the track, I thought was exceptionally good when we gauge it across the landscape of 8 races now. I think actually what we saw last week at Bristol, I thought was very, very good. I mean, let's be honest with you. I don't know. Penske sends two guys out, and they wreck each other in the first 20 laps. It's followed by a 4-hour rain delay. Do you suppose that they could have just waited to even start the event before you put one of the top teams out of the race altogether because they collide on maybe wet conditions? I don't know. That was one controversy. The other controversy, here comes Denny Hamlin. He's running fine. Of course, we get the spin out with the Logano Keselowski group. Now, okay, everything slows down. Okay, oh, rain. Here we go. We're going to red. Hamlin gets out of the car, evidently had run 10 laps or so while having neck spasms, proceeded to stay out of the car. Enter Eric Jones, Trains, Planes, and Automobiles. They had to get every kind of vehicle to get him from Carolina to Bristol. One article said he got there minutes before. Another article said, no, he got here in plenty of time. But irrespective, he jumps in before the restart and takes over Hamlin's ride. So there was a little bit of head scratching, like, what's going on here? Interesting. Not a great day for Jimmy Johnson. It was a nice day for Jeff Gordon, right? He's on his farewell tour. He actually had his best finish of the season. He got a second chance to call the Xfinity race, and he had his youngsters give the fire to command. So Gordon actually had a nice day. A lot of other people, not so much. Not so much. I don't know. Should they have started the race when they did? Should they have waited to, do the final GWC? What do you make of Hamlin? Is this anything, I guess, is what I'm saying. I'll throw it out to either one of you.
Go ahead, Psychic. Give us your thoughts here. I'm curious what you thought of that.
I'm not buying this Denny Hamlin story. This stinks of Michael Waltrip and Clint Boyer. Hey, you got a niche. Yeah, I got a niche. I don't buy that whole next story.
It's an outrage.
Given the news that we heard today that David Ragan is going to be going over to MWR to take over for Vickers ride with Brett Moffitt, and then Eric Jones is going to come up and take the 18 car until Kyle comes back. I think that whole story stinks of collusion. But I will go back to the first show of the season where I said that I thought Eric Jones should be in the 18 car.
Well, I agree with you. We were talking about it here because Fox didn't say a word about it till they were basically coming ready to go to the green. And they were still fighting with getting Eric Jones in the car. And we were all sitting here like, what is this? You know, you never hear of a driver voluntarily just saying, oh, my neck hurts, I'm not going to race. I mean, come on. That's a little bit of a, wimpish move if you look at it from Hamlin's point of view. But
yeah, that was a little
sick. I'm an excellent driver.
Yeah, I think that was a Joe Gibbs directive. The second Denny Hamlin told them, oh, my neck hurts, I think I have a spasm, they immediately saw an opportunity with a long rain delay to put Jones in the car for a lot of laps, and they didn't hesitate, essentially. So, I don't like it. I don't like it a little bit. If I was FedEx, I'd be I'd be a little annoyed, although it probably got them a little more exposure as they came back to the air. But, you know, he didn't run very good in the beginning and ended up 2-3 laps down pretty quickly. He didn't lose too much more than that. He actually, I guess he kind of got the hang of it after running a few laps, but I don't know. I don't like it. That was just my opinion. You know, as far as NASCAR starting a race, not starting a race, they've done this kind of stuff before. It's hard. It's really hard to predict weather sometimes, and I can understand, you know, them trying to get it in. I think they were hoping to get, you know, 100, 150 laps in at least. I don't think they really wanted to just get 20 laps, you know, and then have a caution, which, you know, was probably caused a little bit by the wetness on the track, which ended up, like, as Uncle Mark pointed out, taking out two of the, you know, top contending teams. But, you know, I don't think the Penske drivers have a ton of fans. I don't know that they were all, you know, all that bad. I think a lot more people were happy to see him go, if you know what I mean.
No, I'm on the other side of that. I was kind of pissed.
No.
About that. And not that I'm fans of either guy, but that, you know, that had fantasy implications for me.
No. Oh. Did I think everybody?
You know, it's all about fantasy for me, you know, which is so funny because if you remember last week's show, speaking of fantasy, when we were talking about the Eat My Dust picks, I'm like, you know, everybody was like, oh, everybody's going with Brandon's pick of Keselowski, you know, and I'm like, or Logano, I forget, one of those two.
It was Keselowski.
One of two pesky guys, and I'm like, it was really a toss-up for me between Kenseth and, you know, between Kenseth and Keselowski, and I'm like, I don't know, you know. And I finally went with Keselowski. Yeah, I picked the wrong guy. You know, because I'd be in the distance now if I had gone with Kenseth.
Well, listen, what do you make of Lover's Lane? Because, you know, it got some ink, and it got some early ink, and of course it immediately ran out of any gas, but. There we had Danica and Stenhouse essentially starting side by side. I believe it was like 13th, maybe position back, and then, you know, side by side. But here we go. Danica sets the top 10 record by a female in NASCAR history, and Stenhouse, well, what does he do? He only finishes fourth. So all at once, these guys are starting to move on up. What do you think?
Well, Danica's kind of quietly having a better year. I mean, she's had a couple of top tens. We don't see her, you know, drone striking the wall too much like she was last year.
I got to give her credit. She has driven she's driven out of a couple of wrecks this year.
Yeah, she's...
Hey, yeah, beautiful hair.
I don't know if that has anything to do with her being in a, you know, quote-unquote contract year, trying to get, you know, sponsors re-upped and, you know, where she's going to drive, et cetera, et cetera. But it's certainly not going to hurt her chances. I mean, she's got one thing on her side. She's very popular. She's like the second. She's always right behind Junior in the most popular driver, you know, ballot. So, you know, when you're in that kind of thing, you got a pretty good in with getting sponsors as a general rule. So, you know, I think, you know, she's quietly having a pretty good year. And I think, you know, she deserves a little bit of credit. I mean, I'm not saying she's going to end up being a championship caliber driver. You know, she's clearly the weakest link at Stewart Haas, but, you know, she's getting there.
I don't know. Sidekick, it might bode well for her this week at Richmond, because last week was her second top 10 on a short track. She was ninth last week, and she was seventh at Martinsville. I mean, holy moly, Sidekick, you may want to put down some money on Danica at Richmond. What do you think?
Yeah, that's not happening.
Yeah. Oh, that's hilarious. Well, you know, here's another thing that was great about last week's Bristol. Great, well, not great from a fantasy standpoint, as Sidekick, you just mentioned, and I can so absolutely commiserate with it. When you have accidents and, you know, you have wrecks, well, it just wrecks and had accidents with your fantasy. But, I mean, last week we did have quite a few. There were like seven mad wrecks that occurred, not least of which, and probably the scariest of which, I thought was somewhere in the middle of the race, right around lap 368. Kyle Larson was on the lead lap. He was trying to get around Landon Castle, who was a lap or two down at that point. And just because of traffic, and I believe Jeb Burton was involved, just because of traffic, you know, two cars went up and one car went down when they all shouldn't have done that. And Landon Castle took a hard, hard shot into the outside wall. Fortunately, it was a barriered wall. So, in fact, he was able to get out and walk away. But, boy, it had scary implications. I don't know if you men remember the event I'm mentioning there, but that one was scary.
He went very hard into that wall.
Yeah, straight in, head first, sort of a la Kyle Busch going back to Daytona. But it didn't seem to matter who your guy was. If it was Logano, if it was Keselowski, you might have liked Kurt Busch. You may have liked, there was no reason not to like Jimmy Johnson. He wound up being the first loser, but certainly Truex and Allmendinger and Harvick even. If you had those guys on your fantasy team, you wound up not finishing well. This was the upside-down race when we look at the final standings. Wouldn't you both agree? I don't know. I mean, you look at the top 10 finishes from Bristol, and it really evened out the playing field, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I found Landon Castle's remarks actually kind of funny, where he came out and he was all worried that he messed up Larson, you know, while he was leading, and that was kind of interesting. He wasn't, you know, mad, that's for sure.
No,
considering
he
how hard of
it actually,
hit.
He actually wished him well, and I thought, boy, oh boy, that's a class act. You kind of don't ever hear that or see that. I mean, if a guy gets behind me and he puts me in the wall, maybe I won't say something bad, but I don't know that I would turn around and actually say something sort of positive. But yeah, that was just, I guess, Castle's way of saying, you know what, I made the move and I couldn't hold my line just because of, I'm sure there was aerodynamics involved in the whole motion there too, because all three cars were clustered quickly and then, you know, the spin. But yeah, good for him. I give the kid credit. I like Landon Castle. He was always a prospect. Matter of fact, I'll be using him. I'm going to use him as a back marker. And he actually practiced and ran well thus far at Richmond. All right, let's do this. We're almost to the bottom of the hour. Let's throw out the number for everybody who's listening. If you would like to climb aboard with us, we are chatting NASCAR, and we will continue to chat motorsports for the next half hour or so. So if you want to join us, please do that. You can pick up the phone and give us a call, 347-826-9964. We're waiting on you. And there we go. It's time to set up another one for them. Anybody that's out there, give us a call. Give us a call. Won't you please? Won't you please? I'm trying to think. Who else could we talk about? I mean, should we talk about, could we get into some of the movement that we heard rumored today? Let's do that before we actually talk about the Richmond race that's upcoming and some of the strategy that it'll take to win there. You know, we heard today this whole switch-up, and I don't know, did we cover it completely, about, I guess, Brett Moffitt is going to exit from Michael Waltrip's 55 car. He's not going to be doing that, and that will end, I guess, effectively with this race. Is that right? I understood that to be correct. Because next week we're going to Talladega, and owner, operator Michael Waltrip's going to jump in that Aaron's Dream Machine, and he's going to run it.
Oh, joy.
Right. Yeah. No, absolutely. And
he's good on the restricted
tacos? I think somebody should spill a taco all over the Dream Machine next week. I think that'd be a great idea.
Taco's going to sponsor him.
Is that who it is? Well, that's really who should sponsor him. We're going to have David Reagan. Now, again, see, I'm a little confused. I'm assuming now we're going to have Reagan obviously running in tonight's event. Is Reagan staying in the 18 through Talladega, do you think? Have we heard anything? I'm not sure.
Yeah, everything I'm reading is these changes are all targeted for Kansas, which is the race after Talladega, where that's the movement cycle. Now, from what I understand, that David Reagan – you know, thing isn't set yet. They're trying to sign him, I guess, to a deal is what it, is the wording I'm reading right now, which I didn't know. I mean, because isn't he kind of on loan from Front Row?
Well, I was
going to
say, aren't they right? That's where I'm going. Wouldn't they negotiate Brandon with a Front Row Motorsports, right?
Yeah, I would imagine.
Because I would think he's contracted there on loan to Gibbs. So Gibbs is actually not even perhaps in the conversation, or should they be, or maybe they don't care. Because, again, we're kind of going back to now they're going to try to get the 18 piloted by Jones. The trucks and Cup cars run virtually the same almost from here to the end, I believe.
There's usually a couple.
There might be
of,
a couple one-offs or whatever. Yeah. They miss each other because they might go in an opposite direction. But they're similar enough that I guess there won't be a conflict to have Jones in the car, let's say 90% of the time between now and whenever Kyle Busch returns.
Yeah, everything. That's the way it looks like anyway. It looks like they for whatever reason really want him in the car. Whether it's good or bad, I mean, I think we had this discussion before about them rushing the guy, but I guess they're pretty confident. You know, they want to showcase him, I guess, and try to get some sponsors behind him. I don't know where Gibbs is going to put him. I mean, they just started four cars. I mean, short of the Denny Hamlin exit and, you know, him into the 11 car, I mean, I don't see any other ones going anywhere anytime soon, so... You know, they're all relatively, you know, new contracts at Gibbs. So that's why I don't quite understand the rush with him. You know, you would think that there'd be a little more patience, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, now Frat House Mike quizzes on the chat, you know, who's paying Reagan while he's in the 18 car now? And again, I don't know how that works cooperatively between the teams. In other words, I don't know if Gibbs picks up Reagan during this time, like on a per diem, per event kind of thing, or if, in fact, he continues to be paid under the contract of the 34 team. I'm not exactly sure how compensation works. Do either of you know?
I'm not totally sure, but I would imagine that it's tied to the 18 car, because I know they do.
So it's coming from the sponsorship, in other words?
Yeah, the sponsorship and the purse. There used to be a you know, the money that they win. You know,
right. There
was always generally, in the past, I believe, the formula was based on a 50-50 split between the owner and the driver on the race purse. But then then the big dollar sponsors came in, and then the driver salaries with the contracts started. So, you know, I would imagine the 18 cars paying, you know, the Reagan and whoever's filling in the Front Row's getting paid through that, et cetera, et cetera. I think it would follow the car more so than their original. I've kind of gathered NASCAR contracts are pretty much like football contracts. They're only good for while everybody's happy. As soon as somebody's not happy, they kind of find a way to make things the way they want it, essentially. You know, like, I don't think Front Row would ever stand in the way of somebody putting David Reagan in a better car, because you don't want somebody driving your car who don't want to be driving it. You know, that's just not a good thing. So, you know, that's my impression of how the money worked anyway.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure there's some sort of contract. I mean, you know, regardless of what Reagan's contract was with Front Row or with Toyota, you know, I'm sure there's a contract between Gibbs and Front Row for them giving up this driver. You know what I mean? I can't imagine legally that they would just go in and say, hey, you know, here's David Reagan. We're going to let you have David Reagan. Kind of, you know, gentleman's agreement kind of thing. And I think that's kind of where this whole thing with MWR gets a little muddied, because I think that Gibbs is going to have some sort of notice with regards to, you know, being the conversation with Reagan going to MWR. But I'm sure that there's a little bit with it being Toyota's, you know, and it also depends on where I think you come in on the conspiracy theory of this whole thing coming down. was the announcement that Vickers is no longer won't be eligible at all this season impetus for MWR to say, hey, we want somebody else in the seat instead of Moffitt if it's going to be for the whole year, because Moffitt was just a fill-in? Or was it Gibbs saying, hey, we want to get Eric Jones up into this car, and you guys have lost Vickers, so tell you what, why don't we let Reagan take over for Moffitt in Vickers' car, and that gives us an opportunity to bring up Eric Jones. You know, it's
well,
all
it could be, That could be true. I'm sure Gibbs is driving this thing. I mean, the whole need or want of putting Eric Jones in there is what's driving this, because I don't think David Reagan's done a bad job in the 18 car. I think he's actually done a pretty good job, if you ask me. You know, that crew chief is not a seasoned crew chief. I believe it was his first year in Cup with Kyle. You know, so you got a young crew chief with a younger driver, you know, and I think they did pretty good. I'm not saying he was setting the world on fire, but he wasn't wrecking a lot of cars, and he was running well, qualifying well for the most part.
Yeah, but I think it's on the MWR side.
Well, I think what's driving this is that, because
I don't
understand MWR's so quick to give up on Moffitt. I mean, Moffitt's not done a horrible job for them in the 55 either. Why do you want Reagan over Moffitt all of a sudden? I don't. Some of the stuff that these teams are doing doesn't always make crystal clear sense, I guess.
Well,
you know,
and that's why, you know, could we be looking at it being a Toyota thing or a sponsorship thing?
Yeah, the sponsors are certainly got to sign off on it. I mean, M&M's has got to definitely say, hey, yeah, we're all right with Eric Jones, and Aaron's is, you know, probably wants a more seasoned guy in there than Moffitt, because Moffitt's really not a name. At least David Reagan, you know, people are aware of. He's won a race or two, I think he's won, you know. So that's probably a better deal for the sponsor.
Yeah, interesting. You know, I mean, looking back at it, you both had expressed some skepticism as to whether or not Hamlin was truly injured, and that vacating the seat was either a ruse to just get Jones in the car, or otherwise perhaps it was what? Was it a message to Hamlin? Oh, by the way, oh, you're not feeling up to snuff? Doesn't matter. We've got your replacement right here in the wings. Enter Eric Jones. I mean, that's where I'm going. Was this a message sent by Hamlin, or was it a message maybe sent to Hamlin? Or am I really just chasing a ghost, because there's no message here? Hamlin legitimately was hurt.
No, I bet it was a message of some sort. I think that writing's been on the wall for a while, though. I mean, I think they have every intention of not renewing Denny Hamlin this year. I think you're going to see them move Eric Jones into it. And I think it could be good. I think Hamlin needs a change. He just has been at Gibbs forever, and, you know, he's had bad luck with, you know, injuries at times. I think he just needs a fresh start. I think it'd be good for him, like it was for Kenseth. Like everybody thought it was going to be for Carl Edwards, and still maybe, but kind of got off to a slower start than most expected. But I think this is just destined. I think this is going to happen, and there's nothing anybody can do about it. I think they're just all playing their roles. In other words, Hamlin's playing the role of a good soldier. He knows he has good equipment. So at least he has a car he can go out there and compete in to showcase himself for whoever he goes to. But I think, to me, it almost seems like a foregone conclusion. You know, Hamlin's gone, Jones is in at the end of the year. That's just my feeling of it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think there, Sidekick?
Yeah, right.
Do you think it'd be good for Hamlin
to
get another ride somewhere?
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's kind of the problem here is, you know.
There's no reason not to like Denny Hamlin, like, you know, in tonight's race or tomorrow's race.
I think he would be perfect to be the lead driver at Richard Childress Racing. Richard Childress needs a lead driver, you know, because Ryan Newman is not a lead guy. Neither is Paul Menard. They're both nice complimentary guys. But when Harvick left, that left a big hole at Richard Childress Racing, and I think Hamlin could fill that. That's what I think I'd like to see.
I wonder if Penske would be willing to roll the dice and expand a car.
Well, if they get sponsorship.
Let's get the 12 car, you know, running full time with Penske or something, you know, the 2, the 12, the 22. I could see that at cup level and maybe Hamlin landing over there. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. We'll see. I mean, you know, maybe I'm just, you know, because I've always been a, you know, Richard Childress fan based on you know, Dale Earnhardt driving for him for years. So maybe I just want to see them get a, you know, a good driver out of it.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm a little tainted on that one. And I think Denny Hamlin, I think he still has a lot of good years left in him. I just think he's kind of stagnant where he is and needs a change.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my opinion on it.
No, and I trust your opinion and I like your opinion. Now, listen, folks, if you're out there, you know what you got to do. You just got to pick up the phone and give us a call, 347-826-9964, and tell us what you think. It's as simple as...
What you got by my office.
Okay.
That's it. Just pick up the phone and give us a call. All right, real good. Now, let's touch on another sort of controversial one, or not, depends how you look at the word controversial, but let's look at another issue that kind of cropped up today. We heard from, you know, the boss, Brian France, today in a statement indicating that he would be willing, if at all possible, to accommodate the return of Kyle Busch to eligibility if and when he can return during the regular season to race at the Sprint Cup level. This exemption, obviously, we've heard of this exemption before. They grant the exemption based on a medical, you know, assuming that, you know, there's criteria in place of doctors and that kind of thing. It's verifiable. We've seen it happen. We've also seen the exemption recently, though, in like more 2014 and late 2013, we've seen it applied to non-medical situations. And I go to, I guess, the Tony Stewart issue at the very near the end of regular season last year in the tragic Ward death that occurred. He got an exemption to return. It proved moot because, in fact, of course, he didn't actually, you know, get into the chase, as it turned out. He didn't win a race in enough time, and he didn't have, you know, points enough to make it that way. So, but we saw it applied there, and then more recently now, again, just this year, we've seen the exemption applied, again, not in a medical sense, but in a rare instance, and that's what it is. It's exception and rare instance. We saw the application to Kyle's brother, Kurt Busch, as he was essentially cleared from any wrongdoing following a multi-race suspension that NASCAR levied, after which they rescinded, and then I guess to, like, do the right thing or what have you, they said, oh, and by the way, you're eligible again. Just, you know, meet the criteria from here on out, and you're eligible. So we've seen this applied. Now, today we've learned from, you know, the boss that, in fact, we would be willing to do that. So I guess my first question is, okay, let's just assume something wild. Now, we know Kyle Busch is probably hankering to get back behind the wheel. But let me stick my finger in the air. Let's say he doesn't come back until Pocono, all right? Now, looks to me like Pocono would be right around the beginning of August. Now, if he can get a race win between August and Richmond again, right, which is the last race before the chase, then he would be, at that point, chase eligible. First thought is, well, number one, is that the right thing to do? And, of course, number two, you know, would he have enough time to do it in just a few races back? Tell me about the exemption, man. What do you think about the offer of exemption? This is the right thing to do, irrespective of his return, or not? Who wants
ahead,
to kick it off?
Oh, I want
to
hear
sidekick
first.
There we go. Okay.
Wait, I want to react.
Okay.
I want to hear
I'll
the other
first. If I was the driver, I wouldn't want it because you're going to have what would be a quote-unquote tainted championship because over the history of NASCAR, you know, it's always been a season-long thing, et cetera, et cetera. You know, now you're going to come in and race. If you come in, you know, even if he, let's just say he gets 8 regular season races in. I don't even know if that he's going to get that many if he comes back in the beginning of August because you're talking, what, 5 races? You know, Richmond's the first or second weekend of September. So, you know, it's not going to be a lot of races that he even comes back in. And then he's clearly not going to be able to, well, I wouldn't think he'd be able to get to the top 30 in points. So that there obviously would be waiving. So, you know, I don't know. I don't like it. I mean, I don't have anything against Kyle. I'd love to see him come back, and he'll probably come back with a vengeance, knowing Kyle. He'll probably come back, and he'll probably win a few races. He could end up winning that Richmond race. I've seen him win at Richmond before. Matter of fact, one weekend at the track, Kyle Busch won me like $300 in a pool because he won the race, and I happened to draw him out of the hat. So, you know, Kyle Busch and I have a great history at Richmond. But, you know, he could end up winning. Thank you. He could end up winning that race, but does that mean he should go?
I'm an excellent driver.
I don't know. I've heard arguments back and forth, and I don't know. I think you should run, you know, at least, you know, say 3/4 of the regular season to be, you know, race eligible or, you know, chase championship eligible. I don't know. I think it seems kind of not, you know, I don't know. Something just smells fishy to me. So what do you think there, Sidekick? Go ahead, react.
Well, well, see, there's last year and this year, there's been a couple of rule changes. And one of the rule changes was to the verbiage of qualifying. You know, last season you had to qualify for every championship event. And that's why Tony Stewart had to get that exemption, because you had to qualify for every event. And they changed the wording this year to say you have to start every event that you qualify for, and you have to attempt to qualify for each race. So, you know, with that, you know, the other thing is that there's this medical exemption that we talked about, where, you know, Brian Vickers has it. We were, you know, pre-show, we were talking about, you know, I was saying about, you know, hey, if Brian Vickers came back and won a race, I'd see him in the chase. You know, both these drivers had the intention to start the season, but due to medical, they were unable to race. Now, Vickers did at least run 2 races this season. Before, you know, he was sidelined, he came back, and then was sidelined again, and now we know he's out for the season. But you know, it's interesting, though, the way Brian France chose to word it, saying that, you know, he basically said the reason Kyle Busch is out is because we didn't put those safer barriers in.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may have been kind of why he was making that statement, is, hey, if we had gone and we had safer barriers in, Kyle Busch may not have gotten as messed up as he did. And because we feel slightly at fault for this, you know, when he comes back, if he gets a win, we'll let him into the chase.
Well,
so,
you know, if that's just because NASCAR feels bad, I don't know. I don't know. I think you should run at least, you know, a chunk of the regular season to be eligible. Otherwise, you know, you could make an argument, well, anybody who comes in and wins a race should be chase eligible, you know, and I don't know about that, you know. I mean,
well, I don't know if I'd go that general with it and say anybody that came in, you know. He's getting a medical exception.
Mikey
you know.
Waltrip could win it all next week at Talladega. Is that suddenly his eligibility? Well, see, it goes to something we also talked about, though, earlier, and we haven't really mentioned it, and that is, you know, there are declarations that are made in order to compete and win at a particular series level. So,
and accumulate the points, right. Yeah,
correct,
exactly.
Right. So now, for instance, we've already talked about Eric Jones. Eric Jones might find himself seated very shortly in a cup car. But while the owner and I guess the manufacturer will achieve points as a result of the success of that car, that driver, Eric Jones, does not receive any quality points for being in that series because he declared the Camping World Truck. So, in fact, all of his own hopes ride on the Camping World Truck Series, notwithstanding the fact he's in the Cup car. So here is another kind of conundrum that occurred to me because I have a lot of time and I deal with conundrums. In fact, Kyle Busch was, you know, obviously badly hurt, and I'm not trying to qualify it in any way. My question conundrum is that his injury occurred at a level he was not declared to. However, as a result of that injury, he is not able, obviously, to run in his declared championship until further notice. Now, upon his return, because he was injured at the lower tier, and I'm not saying he shouldn't run that lower tier, but because he was injured at that lower tier, and it prevented him from running in his top quality, top qualified area, I don't know that NASCAR needs to bend over and let him in. In other words, were he injured on his declared series, you can run them all if you want. I don't know that necessarily transferring to the next cup level or whatever it might be should necessarily be broad across all three. I run trucks. I run Sprint. I run Xfinity. I run them all. Well, if you're only collecting points and your highest authority is the Sprint series, then in fact, if you run these lower tiered series and you get injured, I don't know the sport is necessarily at fault. Now, the fact he was radically injured, of course, it's made the sport contemplate their navel and say, yeah, I guess we ought to make it safer. Notwithstanding the fact, though, and I'm not saying the man shouldn't make a living, my thing would be, if you get injured at the level to which you are declared, then you should be granted the waiver. If, however, you are, in fact, jumping, you know, you're doing some cable jumping, you're doing some bushwhacking, you're crossing over and running that extra to get some extra money, that's fine. But if it prevents you then from running in your declared series, shame on you. That's kind of where I'm at with it, and that's a conundrum that came up. I don't know. Am I nuts? Am I being
too
hard?
Well, but you are running under the NASCAR umbrella. It's not like we saw 2 years ago with Tony Stewart.
If that's the case, then I think declaration. If that's the case, then declaration to any series is pointless. Then why declare to a? That means you can get an exemption anywhere. Why can't these guys run all three series? Cherry pick. They used to cherry pick back in the day when there were so many tracks and you were running 2-3 times a week. We've heard about it. Petty would cherry pick a couple. Oh, let me take this track. The competition won't be as good. I'm sure to get a win. I mean, let them cherry pick it then. Let's go back to what it was and stop the declaration nonsense.
I don't think they want to do that.
Yeah, I know.
I'm radical.
I'm just thinking
out
loud.
They don't want a guy like Kyle or Kurt or Carl Edwards or Harvick, who were actually running most, if not all, the Xfinity races just to try to win that championship too. They don't want that. And I like the way they're doing it now that, you know, you have your Xfinity guys running for their championship, and then the other, you have some Cup guys coming in, not as many as you used to, on a consistent basis. I kind of like the change they've made to it. I agree with you. If you get hurt, I don't think you should. I'm sticking to my original statement. I think you should have to run at least a certain percentage of the regular season to qualify for the postseason. I don't care what he got hurt in. And I don't care if NASCAR feels bad because they should have put more safer barrier up, whatever.
See,
Right. Fix the problem, put the safer barrier up, and deal with it from there. You know, that's my thought on that. It's like, you know, don't try to put a gift I'd love to hear Kyle's thoughts on it. I wonder what Kyle
would
say.
Yeah,
I would love to know, because he is a true competitor. I don't know that Kyle Busch would want a quote unquote cheap championship. You know,
no, I agree with you. If I may, Brandon, one final thought that just occurred. You know, when he talked about Kyle, when he talked about yes, I'm going to return. He made it quite clear that his first effort would be to get behind the wheel of a cup car. So he knew that's the level that he's got to be at. And essentially, if I can, yeah, I would work maybe Xfinity back into it. I would work camping trucks into it. And when he was asked, well, why would you? He said, well, that's because that's what I do. I'm a racer. So I get it. And I'm not saying, that he should be sanctioned or penalized as a result of running the extra races. All I'm saying is if you choose to increase your own risk and put yourself out of work as a result, and I'm not saying he went out there and wrecked himself. Certainly it was a horrible accident, but the risk of accidents occur if you're going to run multiple races. So I tend to agree with you. Percentage of race would make sense, or otherwise I go back myself to, you know, I think the waiver should only be exacted at the level at which you were hurt or whatever the case. You know, if it's an accident. I mean, health is something else. That's the thing. Vickers is not suffering like Kyle is. That's a unique situation we have there.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and I just to go further on that, you know, I don't know. I would, the more I think about it, the more I would love to hear somebody ask, you know, Kyle his thoughts. But I think NASCAR have came up with the idea of, well, let's float this out there and see how much grief we get, even considering, you know, what kind of, you know, fallout we would get from, you know, if we would allow him a waiver. And I don't know. I don't like some of the decisions NASCAR's been making lately, and this is another one that, you know, I don't know, I don't like it. I obviously sidekicks the other way, and you know what, if they do give him a pass and let him in, you know, I'm not gonna scream about it, but you know, I still don't think he would be happy with that kind of championship.
Well, and there are points I do agree with you, like, you know, obviously you can't come into the second to the last race, win a race, and then get into the chase and be like, oh, okay, look, I'm going to, you know, and then go through the chase and win. You know, I agree with you. There needs to be some sort of, you know, check on it to say, hey, you know, this is, what do you call it? You know, if you get on the other side of two-thirds of the season, you know, we're not going to let you have this waiver. You need to come back, you know, within the first 24 and not the last 12 kind of thing.
You know what I mean? I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. You got to maintain a top 30 points position. You know, I think there are certain minimums that you need to establish. Otherwise, it's everybody gets a trophy. I don't get
They need to get rid of some of those.
It's not Kyle's fault that he got hurt, but... Brandon, I'm right with you. I think there gets to be a point.
If they're
going to
keep handing these waivers out,
return.
Yeah, right. They need to get rid of some of these quote unquote thresholds you need to do to qualify. If you're going to constantly hand out all these, you know, waivers, and you know what, for the most part, I think they've done a pretty good job with it. I agree. You know, the Kurt Busch thing, NASCAR kind of created themselves. They should have never suspended him. They should have stuck to their guns and waited for the criminal to finish as it was supposed to, you know, and I think they reacted to, you know, an arbitrator ruling, which was stupid. So Kurt Busch getting a waiver was fine. And the Tony Stewart thing, I think, was fine because, you know, that whole situation was a little tense because you had a fatality, you know, involved with it. So, but, you know, both of those guys are going to end up running most of the races. So, you know, that's why I don't really have a big issue with it.
Yes, and I guess I'll leave it with this because we're almost to the top of the hour. I'll do a station identification. The language, once again, that was written by NASCAR, I guess I'll tip my hat to them because essentially the wording is except in rare instance. And that gives a pretty broad threshold by which NASCAR can make use of the exemption. Except in rare instance. It could be a health thing. It could be another area altogether, as we've seen. It might have to do with something legal. It may have to do with something civil. But in those rare instances, they are going to offer the free pass or the exemption possibly for eligibility. Now, of course, even if they offer it to Kyle Busch, he could do that. Return, as I said before, you know, at a later race, you know, Pocono or whatever, and not actually get the win. So then, in fact, it would be sort of like Tony Stewart. It would become moot at that point because he would not have qualified. He would have not been ultimately eligible anyway by virtue of not having points or the win. But I think there has to be some set parameter, and I think we need to clean it up. That's all I'm saying. That's just me. All right, here we are. Top of the hour. You've reached us. You're with us, I hope, listening. Frat House Sports Radio Network. We are in the garage tonight. Race Trim Motorsports Hour. I am your host, Uncle Mark. I am joined, of course, by my compadres all. Brandon, our crew chief, is with us. Our own Frat House sidekick coming from Frat House West, Frat House St. Louis. I forget what he called it.
Midwest,
and of course, Midwest.
Sir.
Thank you, Frat House Midwest. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to switch it up. And what I'd like to do at this point is we're going to let our own Frat House Mike come on board because I thought maybe to switch it up. We're at the top of the hour. Anybody wants to reach out and call us, do that. But we could talk a little NHRA chat because, of course, that's kicking back up. And it's, you know, Frat House Mike will bring us up to date where we are. And then he'll hang with us, and we'll do a little synopsis of what's coming with Richmond, where Brandon's going to be seated, and what's the best fantasy outlook. So that's how it's going to be. I guess we'll do this. Frat House Mike, you are with us, right, buddy?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I thought that music intro there was for me. I was up and doing a little square dance here, but
well, that's good. That's what we like.
I'll
to. And
you,
you know I, what? The audience did it, so
yeah,
really
they were. They were.
So you can do that whenever you like.
I gotta say, I much prefer the Friday night programming. Just from a very personal standpoint, I'm a lot more alert, not feeling absolutely horrible. Yes. Like I did last Sunday. Evenings are much better for me at this time of year.
Why can't we just get in the running car?
Well, we could do that.
Evenings
we
were made for Michelob.
we could do. Yeah, but not behind the wheel of the running car.
No, wasn't it Lowenbrow? Yeah. Wasn't Lowenbrow the evenings were made for? Or maybe
Actually, it used to be weekends.
Time is kind of special.
Get some facts and come back and see me.
I think we're mixing ad promotions from the 80s.
We need Jen. You know, mix everything up for us here.
Obviously, we've got to do a better job.
We better do something better than what we're doing. Frat House Mike, how does it look for NHRA this weekend?
Wow. Does anybody take this sport really seriously? Because it does. No, I do. Hey, let's get over. You know, we've got five events under our belt so far, and boy, the leaderboard. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment. The leaderboard got really, really mixed up following the heats that we had 2 weeks ago out in Las Vegas, which was real nice for me because there was a couple of my favorites that got above the line. So, but anyhow, we're heading out to right now. All the guys are down in Houston, Texas. At the Royal Purple Raceway, and we've got ourselves 3 days. I guess we just had, we had the opening today. We'll have qualifying tomorrow, final qualifying, and then, of course, we'll have our final heats on Sunday down there at the down at the strip at Royal Purple Raceway at the O'Reilly Parts Spring Nationals. Interestingly, the results from 2 weeks ago actually really went quite nicely, as I pointed out from my standpoint. Now, in Top Fuel, it was actually rather interesting because none of the, I guess, really favorites came out of that winning that one. Out of Las Vegas last week, it was 2 weeks ago, that was Richie Crampton, won the Top Fuel final. Coming out of that, he ran up against Larry Dixon, and Richie Crampton won that. But when you jump over to Funny Car, and I had been mentioning this 2 weeks ago when I came on with the last NHRA report, John Force was, I think, about two spots below the cut line. And the cut line is 10. I think he was in 12th place at that point. He might have been 13th. John Force has jumped all the way up, and I'll give the standings in a moment. I think he's like at round 7th. As a result of getting a win at Las Vegas last week. Now, it was at the, unfortunately, in some respects, it was at the mercy of having to beat his one of his teammates there with Robert Height, Robert Height being a JFR driver. So it was he and Robert Height going at it in the final round in Funny Car, and John Force won it. I got to tell you, I was very, very pleased to see it for a couple of reasons, because the John Force car, in fact, a lot of the JFR cars really haven't looked quite right just yet this season. But John's in particular really didn't. And while you saw some of the other, while you would see Height get into some of the additional rounds in the finals, and even Courtney's car get into some of the final rounds in the finals, John was frequently getting knocked out of here in sometimes the first round. So it was real good to see him get a pick up a Wally out there at Las Vegas 2 weeks ago. Top Fuel, Pro Stock. I want to go over to Pro Stock. Pro Stock, I was so happy about this one as well. Erica Anders Stevens picked up another Wally for herself. I believe that's her first of the season. She beat Vincent Nobile, and that really helped her standings out as well. Albeit, that team over there that she's working with, and we've talked about it already early part this season, has really, really, really been impressive. Now, where do things stand? Unfortunately, obviously, as I pointed out before, I think on the previous Friday night program, Top Fuel or NHRA and drag racing is a funny beast. We won't have any ladders, obviously, until after qualifying. So you really don't know that until after everything's completed tomorrow. So I have no idea how things are going to be standing come Sunday. But where do the standings, and, you know, Brandon, I got to tell you, because I know you're a big NHRA fan as well as myself, I don't believe even this early in a season, and I've been following now for, I guess, about five seasons or more, I don't believe I've ever seen standings in Top Fuel this close even this early in the season. There is only a difference of 36 points between first place Antoine Brown and fifth place Richie Crampton. In between, you got Tony Schumacher, Sean Langdon, Spencer Massey, and then Richie Crampton. There's only 36 points separating number one to number five.
I think what accounts for that is there's no Top Fuel team out there dominating. You know, I mean, in Funny Car, you know, JFR had a slow start, but you know they came back with a vengeance this week. But up until then, I mean, it's pretty much been Don Schumacher's, you know, teams, except for Beckman not having the greatest start. But, I mean, Hagen has been up there, and, you know, they don't – in Funny Car, or Top Fuel, rather, I think you've had a – we've almost had, like, a different winner every week,
yep.
You know? And well, I think that's why you probably see that points. You know, there's no one team or two teams, you know, shooting way out in front. That's probably why it's so tight. And that's good for the sport.
You got what? You got Antron, you got Tony Schumacher. Antron's one, Tony's two, Spencer Massey's four. So there's three right there that are DSR, right?
Well,
But then you got the wild card this year has been Sean Langdon. And Sean Langdon's right there sitting smack in the middle at number three. And that's that car that is running every week. They, I guess they, you know, on a shoestring, they're never quite sure who's sponsoring them. So It's been
knuckle
wild.
Knuckle sandwich, baby. Knuckle sandwich.
It's been wild, I got to tell you. And it's a lot of fun, and I'm thrilled to see that it's this competitive still yet this early. Now, over in Funny Car, and we know how things go through the season on this, you could have yourself a 100-point lead on this one right now, and it won't make any difference because Funny Car points seem to vary up a little bit differently. Right now, Matt Hagan sits at the top and Dell Worsham's there. But when I talked about John Force jumped all the way from at least, he was at least 12 and jumped all the way up to number 6. Ron Capps is in there at number 5. Robert Heitz at number 3. Right now, Courtney is below the line at 12. So there's our Funny Car lineup. And over in Pro Stock, that win for Erica Enders really jumped her up. She's now right now only 35 points behind the leader, Jason Line. And there you have it. That's what's happening. We're going to be down in Houston this weekend. Thanks very much. And we'll be following it here from Frat House Sports on Sunday.
That's right. Yeah, that is right. And now let me ask you this, Frat House. They're going to run the following week, so are you going to be able to join us next week prior to Talladega on Sunday? Or how does NHRA shape up going forward?
They will, next weekend, they will actually be out in Kansas. And, we're going to get a couple of, I'm sorry, where? Let's say, no, I'm wrong. You're right. They're going to be, it's going to be 2 weeks, Uncle Mark. 2 weeks.
Okay.
15th will be at Atlanta. And then will be immediately the week after in Topeka, Kansas.
Okay.
There's not too many weeks where they run back-to-back. We'll have two in May, and we will have two in June. And I think there might be two in July. But after that, it's mostly always at least a week break in between. But no, NHRA will be off again next week until May 15.
All right, very good. Well, that's great. So, all right, what we'll do is we will plan on hearing back from you. Final hand. Getting an update in 2 weeks, and of course you'll have plenty to update, because as you said, there's really not much to say tonight being Friday night. All right, here's what let's do. Let's take a quick run over to our new home for the weekend, boys. Richmond International Raceway. It's going to be the Toyota Owners 400. I can spit it out. This is an ISC owned track. It's a D-shaped 3/4 mile. It's asphalt surface. Getting pretty worn, I'm told. Brandon, you can tell us a little bit more about it. It's got, what, minimal banking, you know, what, right around 13, 14 degrees. It's really virtually a flat track. You're going to get around this in about 20, 25 seconds, I guess, on average. Holds a pretty good capacity, about 100,000 people. What do you think, Brandon? Are we going to see a sellout at Bristol?
I don't know about a sellout. Unfortunately, the trend of the live attendance at NASCAR tracks has not been pretty good, and I don't know that this year is really helping, unfortunately. Most tracks we see, removing grandstands. As a matter of fact, just as a side note, I've had permanent seats at Richmond since 1992. Somewhere in the mid-90s, they built a new tower in the backstretch, and we had those seats the entire time they existed. Up until last year, they removed them. So I guess they're at a point where some of these tracks got too big and they had too many seats, and they're redoing some of their layouts. But I still think it's a great track to go watch a race in. If you have a chance to get there, go do it live, because there's really not a bad seat in the place. You can see the whole track. It looks great under the lights. You know, it's just a good experience overall.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you this. Now, our audience does not have the benefit of a visual I have before me. I'm just curious. Could you tell me, in terms of the start-finish line, where do you sit in the track?
Well, we sit right now basically where they come out of pit road. In other words, right in the middle, like a turn 1-2 area. We're actually where we sit in our seats. We actually are looking down the exit of pit road, so we can see all the races off, and it's just past the start finish. It's past the start finish line into turn one, and it's kind of like into turn two, where one and two switch.
Yeah,
where our seats have now moved to. So
yeah.
it's a pretty good view.
No, that's a good vantage.
I will say this. The track
you will be able to see the whole track from a seat though, essentially,
oh, yeah,
right? Because it's only 3/4 of a mile. So
right. Oh, it's yeah, you have no problem seeing the whole track there. It's a great place to watch a race. And they don't have a lot of stuff in the infield that you have to, you know, look around yet. They have some of the, you know, they've installed some of the, you know, view screen boards, you know, the big screen TV kind of things, so you can kind of keep an eye on stuff. But there's nothing big blocking you that you couldn't see across the track. It's good.
Okay,
it's an enjoyable race to watch.
I heard somebody say that if you're good at like Phoenix, Richmond, New Hampshire, which are kind of similar, you know, they're relatively flat. If you're good at those, you're probably good here. Let me ask you, do you think that's true? And does winning from the pole or winning from the top 10 really matter? Does track placement or from where you start, is that going to be a big deal here, unlike, let's say, Bristol? Or will it be the same as Bristol, where we'll see
it's not quite
casting
as bad
and changes?
As Bristol. It's not quite as bad as Bristol. You know, they do still come upon lap traffic relatively quickly because it's only 3/4 of a mile. But it's not as bad. And I think, you know, Richmond, you know, you can get side-by-side racing a lot better at Richmond than you can at Bristol. Bristol, there's usually only, like, one line. And, you know, we saw even some of the top guys had trouble going underneath, you know, on the low side of you know, the lap cars.
The low side was the favored and the top side wasn't, and it's reversed in the last couple of years. We won't have that quite as much here. Plus, there's a little more room, right? I mean, it's a little bit roomier. You can get your arms open a little bit more. I'm not sure what the safer barrier dimensions are, but essentially it's a 3/4 mile track, so we are going to see it. But, I mean, are we going to see the close passing and some of that, or are we going to see banging and bumping or not really –
You'll see some. Yeah, they take the gloves off a little bit. Richmond's been known for some thunder. Jeff Gordon had a lot of them.
Yeah,
had a lot of incidents at Richmond over the years. Kyle Busch, you know, one time I thought was going to get booed out of the place one time when he punted Dale Jr. at Richmond. It was pretty, you know, the crowd was like violently booing him. So yeah, you get some tempers flaring.
That was an awesome race. I loved it.
Yep. Well, that's great, Sidekick. I'm ready to throw it over to you for our fantasy, and I was going to say, Sidekick, you remember, I'm quite sure that last year, for this race last year, Keselowski and Harvick decided to bang fenders on the cool-down lap. I believe Dale Jr. Wound up having his car dinged up and smashed as Keselowski got roughly past him all during the cool down lap because of they were not happy the way it went. Logano won the thing. And like minutes later, after they were out of the cars, this was the event last year in which Katie Mears decided to go with Marcus Ambrose mano a mano, if you remember. And punches were thrown and tempers flared and so you remember those, right, Sidekick?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was our first good test last year. That's when we started to say, oh, wow, this season has moxie. But again, we had a lot of rain delays and a lot of nonsense went on from the weather standpoint. It started getting good. So I guess the question that everybody has on their mind is how are we going to possibly pick the best winning roster for our fantasy. And at this point, we've got to turn it over to Sidekick. We've got about 10 minutes. What do we want to do, Sidekick? How do we like our eggs done in Richmond?
Well, the night belongs to Michelob. For those keeping track at home, that is the official.
Very
good. I guess I got it wrong.
Like
I don't
that.
Know what the hell Lowenbrow had, but they had something similar.
Well, I second the motion. All right, this one's for you. Go ahead, Fred House Sidekick. Give us a winning option.
All right. So, well, one thing I realized after we went off the air last week when we were talking about Bristol was I forgot to mention how much Bristol was like Talladega and Daytona and the super speedways in that it's a crapshoot because
wrecks happen.
You can have a little big one and ruin your day because of how close it is. So, and we saw that last week with a lot of people with the way the fantasy was running. So, this week we're going to Richmond. Let's see. I got my teams mixed up. For Reed's Eastbound and Downers.
That's the house team. Got it.
That's the house team. Mm-hmm. I'm not changing my roster at all from last week. I think last week was a mulligan, and I'm keeping my roster. So that roster was Joey Logano,
mm-hmm.
who's sitting on the pole this week, Brad Keselowski,
mm-hmm.
Kevin Harvick,
mm-hmm.
the number 18 of David Reagan,
mm-hmm.
I guess soon to be Eric Jones. We'll see if goes down. We'll see if the price goes down on the 18.
Oh, watch. Yeah, let's see what happens there. I agree.
And then J.J. Yaley.
Oh, staying with him. 83, is he? What number is he? Or is he 38? Do I have it backwards?
I don't actually have his number.
I believe he's like 83, the number. I'm writing them down by number. It's better than writing
83 is the Benedetto. I know that. 83 is the Benedetto guy, so I'm not quite sure. I think Yaley's in the 40s. 46, maybe?
I wrote his name. I wrote his name this way. I'll double check my stuff. Okay, that's fine. Who's going to win the race?
We're not even close. 23.
Oh. All right, I said 83. Okay.
We're not even on the track.
All right.
I'm going with Joey Logano for my winner, and Ford.
To Ford. Yeah. All right. How about the? How about your own sidekick? Your own personal team. Just curious.
That team, I made a couple tweaks this week. I'm going with Joey Logano, Denny Hamlin, who's on the front row, Kevin Harvick, Alex Bowman, and friend of the show, Cole Witt. I'm going with Denny Hamlin as my race winner and Toyota as my manufacturer.
Oh, good for you. That's right. Good for you.
But which one's your Eat My Dust pick?
Right, that's the final question. Right.
The
final
Eat My Dust pick, I'm going with Joey Logano. Again.
All right, you're going with a 22. My fault. All right, go ahead, Brandon. Give it to us. You're going to be there live to watch them, so you can read them and weep, or you can wrap them and reap. Go ahead. Who's going?
I only made one subtle change on my team. I'm sticking with Kurt Busch, Harvick, Keselowski, and Reagan. I've added Chase Elliott in here. I just see a lot of potential in him, and I think he really is going to try to make up for his kind of embarrassing run at Martinsville where he hit everything but the pace car, as they say.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I'm sticking with Kurt Busch. He's going to be my race winner and eat my dust. I think Kurt Busch is still on a mission to win a race. And he's run well in the past here. I think you could see Kurt Busch walk away with the victory. And I'm obviously going to go with Chevrolet as my manufacturer.
Love it. Love it. Got it. Brad House, Mike, come on in. Tell us how good it's going to be, please.
Yes, sir.
Who's the winning? Who's our winner?
Well, I'm going to tell you. Gentlemen, I'm here to tell you I feel very, very good about this team that I got.
Oh, good!
I think two of us hit sounds at the same time.
I got all three of you coming at me, huh? I did tweak it a little bit. Thank you very much. Thank you. As we all know that I have... If anybody's been following, I have consistently been moving up one spot at a time from 28. I'm now, I think, 24th. Here we go. I'll write it down for you. Two of these guys I'm actually kind of locked in on because the value, I just can't dump them. That's part of the problem. But I'm going to go with Denny Hamlin, Kurt Busch. Tony Stewart has run well here in the past, and he needs a win. And gosh knows, this would be a good track, I think, for him to get a win on. It's a short track. He should do well, despite his placement right now, although I think he's in the top 15. He should do well nonetheless. I can't drop Martin Truex Jr., and I can't drop David Regan because of value. So I'm locked in with them. Hamlin, Busch, Stewart, Truex Jr., Regan, and Kurt Busch, I'm going with as the winner.
You're mocking me, aren't you?
No, I'm not.
Kurt Busch.
Yes.
Now, if we hear Uncle Mark come out with Kurt Busch too, that'd be something.
Oh, then it's going to be Joey Logano. Then Joey Logano is going to win. Because last week when we had three people all pick it, Brad Keselowski was all out within, what, the first 20 laps?
Yep.
Well, all right, here we go. I'll break the ice. In fantasy, I'm going with the 2. I'll stay with the 18. I like the 41. I like the 42. And I like the 51. Yeah, I'm going to go with the 41 car to win the thing for Eat My Dust. I knew that one early, and I'll stay with it. On fantasy side, I'll take the 42 Chevy to win because there's something about Larson. I just think, well, all of the guys I've mentioned, essentially, I mean, you've got to be a pretty good wheelman, I guess it was my thought. So I like, obviously, Kurt Busch as a wheelman. I like Keselowski that way, and I'm going to roll with the 42 of Larson this week. And like everybody said, boy, the 18, the value just keeps going up, so I got to ride him, even though it might be his last or close to his last run with Joe Gibbs. We'll see, man. I don't know. Is he getting the same? I mean, he's getting the same equipment, I guess. It's Toyota. He's not going to the same garage, David Regan. I think this is such a shame for that guy.
Yeah,
Michael Walton,
well,
really?
I would agree.
That'd be like telling me you're going to Roush for the rest of the year to run at the Cup level. To me, it's like almost the same. I mean, maybe am I wrong?
No, I agree with you. I'm not happy about it. I'm not happy about it.
We got narwhals.
Let me be clear real quick, though, Uncle Mark. I just want to clarify because I've got to put up the graphic for the Eat My Dust. Who are you picking for Eat My Dust? Is it Kyle Larson or are you picking Kurt Busch?
No, I'm going with the 41. I'll go with Kurt Busch. Kurt Busch
okay.
I'll take him. He's starting from a reasonably good spot.
Okay.
It's a funny thing, and this one you want to be in the top 10 because the odds are that the greatest odds are that the top 10 winner. Your top 10 position will give you a winner. It's not always like, you know, the top 5. So some of those guys have qualified well. For instance, I mean, shout out to A.J. Allmendinger. He's got good place. He's starting from the front. The only reason I'm a little concerned is because I'm not sure what's going on with the Childress Motors right now. But, you know, there's somebody that, like A.J. Allmendinger, that I think, you know, he could certainly make some noise. And he's a good wheel man. This is different than Bristol. A little more room to maneuver, but you have to be a good wheel man. And you've got to be able to get in and out of corners well, because we know there's not really that much banking. So getting the right balance, right, Brandon? Right, Sidekick? The balance of the car here at Richmond is what it's all about, right?
Yeah, handling and the ability to get back into the throttle quickly coming out of the turn. Cars that you see that can get in that gas quicker coming out of the turns are the ones that, you know, they get the handling down, they go.
Awesome.
Well,
all
we
right,
gave
well,
the kiss of death. Kiss of death is going to Kurt Busch because three of us chose him, which means Joey Logano will probably win. And we're just going to hand another 5 points to, you know, Mr. Sidekick. Are you freaking kidding me? Are you freaking kidding me?
Oh, my goodness. I can't believe it. Don't say it ain't so. Well, listen, man, we've got to wrap this thing up. We only got about 30 seconds. So, listen, enjoy the race out there in Richmond, Brandon, and get some video or pictures or whatever you can do for us and bring that back and share that with us on our Facebook page. Thank you, Sidekick, Frat House Midwest. As always, thank you, Frat House Mike, and thank you, folks, for joining us. Be sure to find us back here next Sunday, 11 a.m. ahead of Talladega. Don't you dare miss it.